Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
I discovered something interesting yesterday.
Okay.
What I discovered is that jackhammers are really loud and not conducive to podcasting.
This is a scientific experiment.
Well, turns out we are having the concrete in our driveway and our patio re-poured because they have been cracked, and it's been, you know, we've had the house for like 19 years and they were cracked and not good when we got them 19 years ago, and it hasn't really improved. Turns out, just wait around, didn't get any better. Entropy doesn't head in that direction. And so they were removing the patio yesterday, and the whole house not conducive to podcasting, not conducive to being in the house, which was unfortunate for the dog and cat who could not escape.
Yeah, they can't go to the coffee shop to work on their stuff.
Yeah, so I had a moment where I actually told the guys tomorrow, because I was doing download today, it's tomorrow, just nothing between 9 and 10. Like, the rest of it, go to town. And it rained last night, so they actually haven't done anything today. But they threatened to come back and demolish our driveway, which would be fine. But since I'm in the garage, that's going to be bad. I'm going to have to, I'm going to have to flee for another location. I'm going to have to do the cafe experience or something, because I'm going to have to just escape the house when that is going on, because it's super loud.
Yeah. I couldn't escape. I haven't escaped the house much since I got back from my trip.
You're snowed in or something, aren't you?
Yeah, it's not that bad, actually. I'm looking out the window, and we've switched to some rain, so it's washed some of the snow away. Got a little warmer in the afternoon, so we didn't get the worst of it here. There are places out, you go out to Western Mass, there's a place up in northwestern Massachusetts that got 2 feet of snow. We did not. We probably got less than a foot. So it was just cold and gross this morning, and I was like, yeah, I could leave the house, or I could stay here where there's already tea and just do that. So I did that.
Yeah, that's the other way to go. That's the I'm stuck inside. We had a really rainy day not too long ago, and I kind of liked it because I just got to just stay in and let the elements rage outside. It's the opposite problem of being driven out of your house by workers who are doing stuff. But you know, it's good to have a place to work, and it's also good to be able to run away from it if you need to. Both of those things.
Both of those things. They are. It's conducive to be flexible.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. Alexa is laughing at people. I'm sure we covered that on our podcast. Who's laughing now, Alexa?
Well, now that you've said that, probably everybody who listens to this show on speakers.
Yeah. It's good.
I did not experience that. I mean, I experience any number of false positives. As I mentioned in the little post I wrote about that, I'd had people over earlier this week, and both the HomePod and the Echo, like within, you know, a minute of each other, both were getting false positives, and I got some quizzical looks from my friends about how many robots I actually have in this house. I have to say, you know, I've gotten relatively accustomed to my iPhone and iPad and all that stuff being pretty good about not, in fact, sometimes perhaps being too good at not responding when they hear their voice. But the HomePod doesn't have that ability to filter based on recognizing who you are. And I have had a lot of times where it's gotten triggered by accident. So that, to me, that is a... That needs to come along the pike at some point here, because it's pretty bad. and I don't know, maybe I'm alone in that, but I, you know, like I said, I feel like Apple's developed that tech on the iPhone and the iPad where they like have you train it to recognize your voice. And that way, if you have other people in your house with their own iPhones and they want to talk to Siri, they can talk to their Siri. You can talk to your Siri. It's fine. And I understand that there's a challenge in terms of like, if you've got multiple people in the house, how do you deal with training it? I don't know. So maybe they just got to refine the recognition algorithm and have that get better, but it's irritating.
Yeah, we get the one that got us was a scary story that it started reading.
Oh, yeah.
No prompting while we were watching TV. And suddenly the lady starts talking while we're watching TV and I pause it and she's telling some strange story.
Yep.
Like, stop.
That happened. I think he read a poem once.
Yeah. We got a poem once too. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what it thought it heard. I mean, at least with the one advantage I would say the Echo is you can actually go and look at what it thinks it heard. But the HomePod doesn't offer that. Like, you can't go into the HomePod app and see, like, why were you triggered there? And that's, you know, frustrating, too, because it's just like, I don't know what happened. It's a mystery.
Hmm.
But some of this is just collateral damage for having this stuff in your house. And, of course, as people are saying, you know, everybody who has been very smug about not wanting one of these things in their house has taken this as a great example of why not to. I don't know. It's a weird, the laughing thing is weird, but it's also not like something that I would consider a reason for not using these devices. It's just that when the things go wrong, they're weirder.
I think it's too cute by half. I think that's the problem with a lot of this stuff is that you should basically not do too many weird sayings and wacky responses because it can be frustrating when they're accidentally triggered. It can be frustrating when you're not getting it to do something simple you feel, but it's happy to give you a jokey response like I don't want to hear that when Siri is misbehaving. Right. And the same goes with like if a slightly misheard thing leads to laughter or a poem or whatever, then maybe you need to do a better job of like not letting that. Before you can do that, you got to make it more accurate.
Yeah, and I'd argue that you even have to like cut down on the verbosity of the responses in general. Like when I tell the HomePod to turn my lights on and it gives me like a, "All right, Dan, that's good. Done." It's like, "No, you did not need to issue more than like I like it when it says, "Okay," or
yeah,
"Done,"
the
or
Echo
something like
just
that.
Just says, "Okay."
Yeah. And so sometimes the HomePod is just like done. And I'm like, perfect. That is the length that should be. I don't need like a huge, you don't need like a personality when I told you to turn the lights on. And some of that is just.
Is it stalling for time? All right, Dan, I hear you. Sounds good. Let's give that a try. Trying it now.
But
this is going to happen.
Which light? Exactly. Of all the lights, which would you say is your favorite light?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It feels like. It's just too wordy, and I think it should, in those cases, when you're not at, like, it's the same thing, I've complained about this elsewhere, I can't remember if we talked about it last week or not, but I do appreciate, for example, that when I ask the HomePod, what's the low temperature for the day, it just gives me the low temperature. If I ask the Echo that, it will go through the entire forecast for the day, and including, currently, since we had the snowstorm, every single question about the weather begins with, there's a winter storm warning in effect for Somerville. And it's like, get to the point. If you make me wait more than, you know, 20 seconds for an answer here, I'm just going to go look it up because this is annoying. And I think all of the devices that do this, you know, could take a harder look at that and try to deliver information more efficiently.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Like, it's like if you ask, like, Abraham Lincoln's height, and it's like, Abraham Lincoln was the 16th president. He was president from 18th, you know, mm-hmm. And you're like, get to the point. That's not what I asked you. Like, if you asked a student that, like, in a class or something, you know, that would be considered not answering the question.
What else is going on?
Well, it's March. March is an interesting time. I was just writing my Macworld column for the week, which should show up tomorrow. And March, you know, June and September are Apple's big events, right? We get all the software updates in June, and we mostly get hardware updates and the launch of said software in September. But over the past several years, Apple has often announced things in March as well. And it provides, I think, a certain degree of pleasing symmetry, right? Like you've got every 3 months, you've got some sort of Apple announcement, roughly, you know, with the exception of sort of the Christmas season in there. And sometimes it's like just minor updates. Sometimes it's more substantial stuff. And so there's been a lot of talk about whether or not there might be a March event this year. I don't believe there was an event last year, and there were actually several fairly important, like There was the 9.7-inch iPad. There was a red version of the iPhone 7. There was Clips. There was like some Swift Playground improvements, right? They sort of like had their own little like press release day. And I guess at this point, I'm feeling like I would be surprised if there wasn't something somewhere in the month, even if it's not a full-blown event, but is rather, you know, revisions of existing products. So I was sort of collecting some ideas on what you might see show up at that point. And I think for me, the top candidates are the AirPower and the wireless charging case for the AirPods.
Sure.
Which we're expecting probably relatively soon. And then the two big questions for me are, is there going to be any sort of revamp to the non-Pro iPads? And is there a revamp to the iPhone SE? The non-Pro iPads, I think, are possible, but maybe not required. I mean, the iPad they introduced last year is a pretty solid machine, and it's pretty cheap.
Yeah.
The bigger question there for me is whether or not the iPad mini is still for this world or
is
not.
Is it alive or not?
Because they could announce an update and just say, like, hey, we kind of did to the iPad mini what we did to the iPad last year. Here's like a low-cost version with new internals, and it's just the iPad mini, right?
Yeah.
They could. I don't know if they care. I don't know if it sells well enough. I don't know if there's enough interest in that. There may not be with all the large phones out these days. The iPad mini just may not be. They may just be content to keep selling the current version until nobody's buying it anymore.
Which may be now.
We just don't know. The SE is in a similar predicament too, right? Where it's we only have one data point. We don't know whether this is a product that Apple is going to refresh from time to time, or whether it was just sort of a one-off to position it in that space, you know, that sort of price category, and they'll just keep it there until people stop buying it. Which again could be now. But I know a lot of people who really are big fans of the SE, and I feel like it's, anecdotally anyways, I think it's done well for them.
Yeah.
So I could see a refresh of that with, you know, an A10. It's currently got an A8, which is, ironically, the same chip that's in the HomePod. So, you know, if it can run a smart speaker, it can run a, their smartphone is maybe a little bit longer in the tooth. But there's also been rumors that the a revamp of the SE might have a slightly bigger screen. I saw 4.2 inches being floated out there, which I'm guessing they might even be able to fit in the same chassis, just depending on how they deal with, like, you know, not even the bezel, but like the borders on the display and stuff like that. There's always a little bit of room to play with there.
Right. They could also, it's a good question. Like, how much work do they want to put into something like that?
Exactly.
That's we have another conversation that we should have is about another product that does that. But there are rumors that there are going to be new iPad Pros at WWDC, probably, which is, I think, fine, reasonable.
It's a year later. Nice. That seems reasonable.
But as for the original iPad, the iPad, nameless iPad, I think that could be. It feels like there's something maybe that we'll hear from Apple, but who knows what it'll be. AirPower is laying out there, you're right, and a new AirPods case.
Yeah.
That is one of the promised for this year kind of things that might be a spring thing. I do wonder about Mac announcements too. Maybe there's some Mac stuff that they could talk about in the spring.
Absolutely. I mean, granted, what they would likely talk about seems, I don't know. The Mac Mini you can throw into a category with the SE and the iPad Mini, which is to say, Apple revamps it whenever the hell it feels
like.
Yeah,
and do they care?
So those are
in there. I would imagine that that Mac Pro isn't going to be addressed until WWDC because that's the right audience for it.
But I doubt it. Yeah,
but there is MacBook Air, which is what I alluded to earlier, which is another one of these products that, I mean, this week, people may be tired of it because Mike and I talked about it on an upgrade. I wrote a whole article about it. And if you're not tired of me talking about the MacBook Air already, wait until the talk show comes out today or tomorrow. Because Gruber and I talked about that for like 40 minutes then too. So yeah.
And if you listen to the Rebound and Clockwise this week, we addressed it in both of those places as well. So maybe everybody has heard us talk about
it. I feel like my definitive line about the MacBook Air, which I wrote my piece at Macworld this week, is called "Why Won't It Die?" And I got an angry letter from somebody who says, "Why do you want it to die?" I said, "You should read the article. I don't want it to die." But my line in there is that encapsulates this whole thing is, what the heck is going on? That's really what it is. Like, there's lots of things Apple could do, but you look at the Air and then a rumor that they're going to, this supply chain rumor that says that they're going to update it and lower its price, which is weird because it's a supply chain rumor, so the lowering the price doesn't actually make any sense. That's not...
It's already the cheapest.
That doesn't come from the supply chain. Like, pricing doesn't come from the supply chain.
And it's the cheapest laptop in their lineup already. I'm not sure that they need to undercut it.
A lot of times the hardware rumor people... the people, and I mean the sources of the rumors, often like have their own theories that they pass over when they're passing over their actual information. They'll be like, I saw this thing and this is what it's probably going to do. And a lot of times that's just the wrong, don't listen to their analysis, just listen to their facts.
I wonder if sometimes they're also like the people who do the bill of materials analysis and they're like, hey, I work in hardware and I know it doesn't cost more than this much to make this device.
So
like,
they must be cutting the price.
Exactly. That's not increasing their margins.
Yeah. But still, it is the what the heck kind of thing about, like, I can't decide whether they... It's hard to believe that they didn't expect that the MacBook Air would die and that something happened to change the game. And the questions are, what was that? Was that the Air's sales were stronger than they thought? Was it that the MacBook was more expensive to make than they thought? Was it that they didn't expect education to say that they wouldn't buy anything over $1,000 and so they kind of kept it around? I don't know quite what changed here. And then there's the mystery of the MacBook Pro 13 without Touch Bar, which is a terrible product name for a product that's basically the MacBook Air for $300 extra.
Plus, they have had some reliability problems. There have been a lot of
with everything that's not the MacBook
complaints.
Air. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So maybe they had this situation where they ended up having to retool the MacBook line rather than what they hoped would happen, which is that they could just ride them to the point where their margins were better and that they could lower the price a little bit. I don't know. I don't know what their strategy was. I have a hard time believing their strategy was that they were going to keep the MacBook Air around. I mean, maybe their strategy was that they were going to cut the MacBook Air and it was going to be amazing because they will have increased the average selling price of every Mac laptop by hundreds of dollars because the base of the line was going to go up 300. But I think somebody told them, no, we're not going to buy your 1299 computer in education or wherever, but whatever it is, something weird happened. And as a result, you know, this thing is stuck around and rumor has it might get updated.
That's the question to me is also like, is the update to a MacBook Air? This is the same sort of question we were just talking about with the SE. Is it, you know what? We're still churning these out so regularly that we can make some small tweaks to the internals. Right. And there we go. It's a new MacBook Air.
Because you put enough work in it, and it's a new computer, and that like is way more expensive to do. It hurts your margins, and that's kind of like not why the Air is in the product line because it's cheap to make it, and so
it's
that
old,
they can
right like
exactly
been doing, making it forever. But the weird thing about it is that at the same time, the idea that they would come out with a refresh version of this computer, which is like the only computer in their lineup that doesn't have a Retina display, you know, that is using all this old tech in there.
USB-A ports. It's got MagSafe.
MagSafe. Yeah. It's like, are they just going to really just keep it around?
I've tiptoed around this in a couple of places, but I'm gonna give you my prediction now. And this is not based on anything. And I'm not even saying I think this is the most likely thing that's going to happen, but I think this is the story I like the most. And so I kind of want it to be true, which is that Apple is going to do a spec reduced version of either the MacBook or the MacBook Pro Escape, which is the one that's using the same class processor as the MacBook Air.
And just call it the MacBook Air?
And is the same weight. And, well, I don't know. I think in my story that I'm weaving here that is probably wrong, I'm going to say they're not going to call it the MacBook Air. Although, maybe they will. But anyway, I think they're going to take one of those products and do what Microsoft did with the Surface Book, which is they're going to de-specify it down to a base model that's $999. And it one of those two systems. And they're going to eat... I mean, they're not going to eat $300 because they're going to... It's going to be a lower spec model, maybe, than the $1299 version. If I had my druthers, I guess I should just... If I'm going to do this, I should be specific. I would say take that MacBook Escape.
Yeah.
Take it out of the MacBook Pro line entirely, give it a new name, get it to start at $999 and say basically this is the new MacBook Air, and maybe even just call it that and say MacBook Air starts at $999, MacBook is a pound lighter and it starts at $11 or $12.99, and then there's MacBook Pro. And maybe that was the original plan and it just was too expensive for them to make it, and so they didn't want to sell it. But that would like make it all make sense again, rather than having like 2 3-pound laptops and a 2-pound laptop all kind of floating around 12-13 inches. It doesn't make one's old tech, two are new tech. Like, it doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah. No. I mean, and I agree with you that of those options, the MacBook Pro Escape, whatever you want to call it,
I mean, I'd forgotten
the better option. I don't think
I'd forgotten. It's less than an ounce difference between
it's
the Air and the MacBook Escape. There's less than an ounce difference in weight.
I looked at this at one point because I was curious, like when I was starting to feel Retina envy on my MacBook Air, and I compared it. Like, even the 11 inch is pretty close. Like, the 13 inch Escape is pretty close to size, the footprint, aside from like the depth of it. I think it's otherwise very, very similar. And as for the MacBook, I don't know how much you can de-spec the MacBook to get it to that price.
Well, yeah, that's true.
It's already kind of an underperformer.
The reason I don't think that's the one that will go down is only because you are paying for thinness and lightness. Like,
right.
It's not priced the way it is. Like, the Air being the cheapest one, it was one thing, but I think Apple in its philosophy would say that you're paying a little extra to get the thinnest and lightest experience, that it's actually a premium. What Microsoft did is they did 4 gigs of RAM, which I have a hard time seeing Apple going down there, because that would be a really bad experience. And, you know, maybe even being more stingy on the storage and going down to like, because the MacBook starts at 8/256. They could start it at 4/128, and that would be a lousy computer, but, you know,
right,
it would be $999.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it seems tough.
Doesn't seem
a tough sale.
Doesn't seem like what they would do, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're totally right. Like, I agree with you. It's a totally weird situation for them to kind of be in, and I think they had envisioned getting the MacBook cost curve down faster.
Maybe that's the answer, is that they thought that would be down to. But then again, there's the margin thing. I think part of this is Apple's commitment to having big margins working against this kind of move, which is like, you can do it one of two ways. You can either kind of be aggressive with price in order to clear out an old product and sell more products, or maybe somebody just said, look, why would we do that when a lot of people are going to buy the MacBook, and if we keep it at $12.99 and we also make a huge profit at $9.99 with the Air, so let's leave it where it is and soak up the money. It just doesn't seem tenable in the long run.
Too. Yeah, I agree. I mean, and it's I don't know. I think the reason I had expected the MacBook cost curve to come down was because it seemed to follow the pattern of the MacBook Air itself, which was obviously released at a much higher price point because it was super thin at the time, and it was kind of underpowered, much like the early MacBook. And so it seemed like, well, that seems like a pretty logical pattern for them to follow. And then either, to your point, they decided they didn't want to lose that profit, or they couldn't for some reason.
I think the MacBook is great for what it is too. Jamie has one, and I've gotten to use it a little bit, and it's been a while since the original MacBook came out, basically since I've used one of those, and it's fun. It's great. It's a great system for students. I mean, not maybe if you're editing HD video, but like for everything else, it's a great little laptop. So like, if I had to pick one. But I also see why you might want to pay a premium for that that shaving off a pound and have the other one down there. My theory, and this is knowing nothing about the chip industry, is that they're running out of parts to put in the old MacBook Air design. It's using 2 generation, almost 3 generations soon ago, Intel processors and an Intel chipset. And I wonder at some point if they're just literally you can't find those parts anymore. And that's why I think more reasonable theory is like, if I'm Apple and I'm going to update the Air, what would I do if I was put in charge of that project? And I would probably say, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to build in a 7th generation Intel Dell processor that's basically a match for what we've got in there now, and I want to put it on a motherboard that's basically the exact same size and shape as the one that's in the MacBook Air, and just like let's do the minimum possible here in terms of redesign. Maybe not change the ports, although depending on the chipset, maybe you replace the MagSafe with a USB-C or something like that. But you know, do the minimum possible, because otherwise you're redesigning. They don't want a fourth new laptop design in their product line, because you know the end game here is not to have four distinctly different laptop designs in their product line. So you like minimum.
They'd like to be back at that MacBook Pro dynamic, I think, ideally. Like,
Or three, with the Escape being this outlier of like it probably needs its own name, but like it serves a purpose that's not. I mean, in fact, actually, Dan, you know what it is? It's the MacBook Air 11 13, MacBook Pro 13 15 dynamic is really what they want.
Right,
and the MacBook is the 11, and the Escape is the 13, and then there's Pros. But it's all mixed up and stuff. But anyway, if I were in charge of that product, that's what I would probably assume that I would be charged to do, is like make as little exterior change as possible and just get us a new thing that we can say is modern, and you don't change the display, and you don't change the ports, and you just let it sit there. But I do think there must be a calculation within Apple that is like, literally, why are we putting more engineering effort into this thing? Like, why would we do that? But at some point, if you want to keep selling it, you would have to do that, which again leads to my what the heck is going on here, which is, do you keep selling it at all? And the only answer seems to be that Apple can't bear to have those modern Retina laptops sell for less than $1,299. Right.
Yep.
I wonder what the margins are that they can't bear it. And maybe they don't need to. I mean, the way iPhones sell, you sell old iPhones for sure. Cheap. The iPhone SE is nothing but an iPhone 5S plus, right? I mean, that's what the iPhone SE is. It's a 5 phone S plus, let's say.
Right.
Not plus.
Sure.
Plus is the wrong thing, because it's an iPhone SVU. It's an old thing with some new internals, which I guess, you know, that's what a MacBook Air would be, an old thing with some newer internals. I don't know. It's super weird. And there's many different ways they can go, and we don't really have any information other than this one completely scant rumor, but it does just put a spotlight back on, you know, if you imagine all the Apple laptops sitting there and then a spotlight comes on the MacBook Air and everybody gets real awkward, like, oh yeah, I'm going to just move. Can somebody turn that spotlight off? But,
well, I mean, it's not the first time Apple's had to deal with that either. I mean, for a long time, they had like an old MacBook Pro, the non-Retina one with a CD drive that just sat around there because like people were buying it.
But I never got the sense that had to do with like there were certain markets where it was necessary, and so they had to keep making them and have to keep it around. The impression I get, and Gruber brought this up in the talk show that is, I think, not yet out as we record this. It's not out. Is that... We talked about the MacBook Air on a previous show and immediately heard from all these people who work at Apple Retail saying, that's right, because Gruber and I talked about how we thought the MacBook Pro sold the best, like that was the definitive Apple laptop. And we just got a massive number of comments from people who work at Apple Retail saying, no, it's the MacBook Air. MacBook Air is still the best, still sells the best. Everybody loves it. It's the top seller. And I would not be surprised if, when there's not a flood of new buyers for a brand new announced product, the MacBook Air is still the best seller.
It's cheap. It's cheap, and it's a really good machine.
And it's great. That was my point in my Macworld article, is the thing is, what if customers don't see the value in new tech that Apple sees? So it's like, and you tick down the list, is like, I like Retina, but a lot of people don't notice it. And a lot of people who notice it don't care. MagSafe is really nice, and people are used to it. The keyboard is the one that, if you're an existing Mac laptop user looking to now upgrade, it's going to be the same keyboard, whereas the other one's new. I'm not even trying to make a value judgment about the keyboard. People always prefer the thing that's familiar to the thing that's new. And then you've got the USB-C stuff, which... means basically you're not only spending $300 more on the computer, but you're going to have to buy a bunch of adapters probably for your stuff. Like, right. It's really easy to look at that and say, you know what? And this one is only $9.99.
Right, right. And it's got all those rectangle right. parts I like.
Sold.
And that cool MagSafe thing.
And that's a tough one. I get it. Because it doesn't, not that I don't appreciate what's in those higher end laptops and Retina especially, but like when people, I had a friend whose MacBook Air died and she was like, what laptop should I get? And I said, well, it's a tough one. I said, you might want to get another MacBook Air. And she had an 11. So I said, you might want to look at a refurbed 11 because Apple still sells and just get the last of the refurbed 11 inch Airs. Rather than because I said the MacBook is the spiritual successor, but you're not just going to have to spend $300 more. You're going to buy a bunch of adapters for your stuff. Like, eh.
Yeah, I mean, if I could get a version of my 11 inch MacBook Air with a Retina display,
I know, I mean, right?
I might never update it again ever.
Yeah, that's the only issue I have with that computer at all. When I use mine is
like
the,
I said,
the screen makes me a little sad, but that's it.
I was traveling with it last week and I edited clockwise on Logic on it, and it yeah. performed great.
I've edited
so
dozens
much better
of podcasts
than I expected
on the 11-inch Air. Dozens. Well, yeah, that's right. And you used to edit in a GarageBand, and are now using Logic. Logic on the 11-inch Air, it's great. It's fine. Logic is way faster than GarageBand. GarageBand is super pokey, but Logic is just it's great. I mean, hundreds of podcasts I've edited on an 11-inch Air. With multi-track and all of the, and it's fine. It's like, it's a pretty great system.
I had no problems. I felt like my performance was perfectly fine. It's just, yeah. So there's nothing I can't, like, that's the most intensive thing I do, really. Like, and if it handles that with aplomb, like, there's no reason for me to update that computer anytime soon.
Jamie's
here. Which
is
here. a weird position to be in.
This is I'm talking to Dan, the secret Six Colors podcast. I just leave the door open. And she just scared the dog. She's behind some annoying driver. She just got home from school.
15 miles.
15 miles.
There's everything. Everything. Nothing is cut out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's frustrating being a driver, isn't it?
Yeah.
Other drivers are the worst, aren't they?
They are the worst.
They are. So
just happened.
Yeah.
She's
venting and scaring the dog. These things. And now she's closing the door. She doesn't want to hear it. She doesn't want to be heard or hear it. Yeah, see? This is what people pay for. Yeah, so basically WTF is what we're saying. MacBook Air, no idea. It's great. That's why. I mean, I understand why people are buying it. It's fine. The problem is that Apple's like, but we have all these other more expensive things that... And again, it's fine. It's fine that it's fine. It's good that it's good. It's real good. But at some point, like, their product line doesn't make sense. And at some point, they can't just keep the old computer around. They either have to update it or go away. And wouldn't it be something if they decided, you know what? We planned on getting rid of this thing, and we're just not. We're just gonna keep doing it. That would be quite a thing. Because there's maintenance mode is one thing. Putting actual investment into making it better and keeping it in the product line is an altogether different thing.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of moving pieces there, and that's what they're, yeah. I assume, doing their very calculated equations about is what makes the most sense, what gets us the most.
Oh,
I mean, yeah, it's not all about profit, but like it's about profit.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to mention, I didn't mention with Gruber, is the low end iMac is the same deal. There's that low end non-Retina iMac,
right?
And it's the same thing. It's like, how do we keep a base model that probably sells into education and also lets them say, starting at this price, $10.99, you can get an iMac, but it's the 21.5 inch model and it's got a spinning hard drive and no Retina. And that's the other kind of no Retina device that they still sell, because again, that's the one that costs less than $12.99.
Right.
In this
sure.
case, it's $10.99, I mean, but it's the same story.
That iPad we were just talking about too is, you know, the $329
iPad. At least
iPad,
it has Retina, like, though. At least
sure,
it has Retina.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's smaller screen. Got that going for you. Yeah, I had that moment yesterday. Actually, just thinking about this, I think I posted a picture in one of the Slacks you and I are in that I got a copy of my audiobook on CD, and realized not only do I not have a CD drive to rip it from were I so inclined, but I don't own like a CD player.
Wow. Like, I have a CD player in the car.
That's probably, I have a CD player in the car that I have never used.
Yeah. In our van, there's a CD player, and I think it literally has never had. Well, no, it might have had a CD in at one time, because it's actually got a really cool feature where it will rip a CD.
Oh.
And it's got a copy of like CDDB, which means that any new CDs would not be visible, but old ones would be visible. And it's got a small amount of flash, and it'll actually like rip your CD and put it in memory. And we'd never use that feature. It's
what
very nice.
Weird but, product. That was a product for a very specific age.
Yeah, right. Which by the time it got in cars was probably already long past.
Right. Like I was borrowing my friend's car when I was in Seattle, and his car is just from that era where they took out the tape decks, but hadn't put in aux jacks. So there's no no way to get audio on that.
That was the 2005 Civic that that Jamie,
that is literally I think what it is
that Jamie drives. It was like that, and when we went to that was Lauren's sister's car, and we went and they were in LA and they were moving to New York, and they're like, here's the car. We're like, all right, we'll meet you at LAX. So I flew to LAX and was met at the curb by Lauren's sister and her husband, and I drove north, which was, it was really weird to do that, but I brought all this entertainment with me, and I had like to cover all of my bases. So I had like a cassette adapter, and I had an auxiliary plug, and I brought a little speaker, a little Bluetooth speaker, and I brought some CDs that I burned. Literally, I had to remember how to burn CDs. This is like 2014, because I had not burned a CD in ages, but I thought, you never know how this is going to go. And it turns out, yes, indeed, the 2005 Civic had no aux jack and no tape deck.
Yep.
And so I ended up listening to some podcasts on the little Bluetooth speaker and playing those CDs. And that was all I could do. And the first thing I did when I got home was order an aftermarket player with Bluetooth and an aux jack, and I took it apart and put in a new one.
Mine's not quite as bad, because for my car I bought, which was, as I was thinking the other day, it's almost 6 years old now. So it has Bluetooth, which is fine, but it also came with it doesn't have a USB port, but it does have an iPod connector. That's a 30-pin connector that I don't think I can ever replace.
Yeah.
So the one that's like
the one I bought.
So dumb. Why?
The one I bought had a USB, and our van has a USB,
sure.
And so I, you know, it's USB, and then you plug in a lightning cable, and it works fine. And so that, although it's in practical terms, it's always the Bluetooth stuff that I end up using. And yes, it has a CD player too, which makes me laugh, because again,
it was worse when I had that crazy Bluetooth bug where it wouldn't play like the left channel or something. That was hilarious and terrible for a while. But yes, since then, Bluetooth all the way. And you know, frankly, I rent a lot of cars when I travel, and I use Zipcar from time to time, and I feel like at least in those cases, almost everything has Bluetooth now, which is, you know, Bluetooth's not, it's one of those technologies that's like, it's not great, but it works. So at least you can use it.
Well, thanks to everybody out there for being a six-color subscriber. We really appreciate it. You allow us to spend time posting links, writing stories, doing things like my big HomePod review that I posted last Friday, stuff like that. It's because of you. So thank you. And Dan, you staying at home this weekend?
God, yes.
It's good. Good for you. All right. Well, stay inside. Remain indoors. Don't get all blown away by the nor'easter out there.
I'll try. I'll do what I can.
Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.